afternoon, everyone. The candidates, I just have the signal that we're on the air and ready to go. If you could turn on your cameras but stay muted until such time as you have a question or I call upon you. As soon as we have you all on camera here, we'll get started. It looks like we're all here. Thank you. Well, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Paul Ewers. I'm the city attorney for the city of Fairbanks. I have been asked to be the moderator for this candidates forum. And first, take a moment to explain how we got to this point and then how we'll proceed from this point. The chief's position for the city of Fairbanks was first posted in the middle of December of 2020 for internal applicants. That is, for current city employees who were interested in the position. It was then advertised externally. The city received a total of 18 applications, 2 internal and 16 external. At the request of the mayor, the city's HR director, Angela Foster Snow, with the generous help of Juneau Police Chief Ed Mercer and with police professional consultant Greg Russell, reviewed the applications. 10 candidates were recommended to the mayor to move on. Those 10 candidates were then interviewed by the nine member panel that the mayor had appointed, and they recommended 5 candidates for further consideration. Those 5 candidates are with us today. Following this forum, the interview panel will again meet and deliberate and decide which of the 5 candidates to recommend to the mayor for the chief job. The mayor will then make his decision. The final step in the process will be confirmation by the city council. That's likely to take place at the next city council meeting, which is set for February 22nd. And we're ready to go. It's my pleasure to welcome the 5 candidates to the candidates forum. The candidates were each given copies of 12 questions for, I believe it was yesterday, 2 required questions, 10 optional questions. The 2 required questions will be answered by all of the candidates, and then the candidates will each answer one of the optional questions that's selected at random. The 2 required questions were submitted and prepared by the Fairbanks Diversity Council. The 10 optional questions were based on interest expressed by the Diversity Council, by the administration, and by members of the public. The rules are, for each question, the candidates will be allowed a maximum of 5 minutes. Now, on your screens, you should see it's on my old timer at my upper left-hand corner of my screen. You should see a box, and if we have this working, it will soon turn green. There it goes. When you start your question period, the box will start green. After 4 minutes, with 1 minute remaining, it will turn yellow. There we go. And then when your time is up, it will turn red. Police officers, you should be familiar. It's the same as traffic light signals. Yes. After the final answers, each candidate will be allowed a short closing statement. So we'll start first by giving each candidate 2 minutes to introduce themselves, give a little brief sketch for the people that are listening in. So we're going to go, we'll just start off in alphabetical order, and Kula Black, you are first.
Good evening, Juan. Good evening to everyone. My name is Kula Black. I'm joining you from North Carolina, where the time is 9:36, so if I sound tired, I apologize. I want to thank everyone for allowing me to participate. This has been an exceptional journey. I hope that my assessment questions that I shared gave you a general idea of my background and my history. I didn't share a lot of information about my education, but I'm more than willing to do that at any point. I do have degrees and was recently accepted for a leadership master's program at Western Carolina University online. I have leadership certifications through the FBI Executive Leadership Program, the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center's Females in Law Enforcement Leadership. And currently I'm involved in a leadership certification, a 300-hour program at one of our local colleges. But for me, I wanted to get across something, an answer to a question that wasn't on here that I think is one of the most important questions of all, which is why? Why be in law enforcement at this point in time? And I want everyone to know that my why is that I'm service for good. I chose to pursue law enforcement because I believe in my position that I can make the world a better place. And I feel it's the greatest job in the world. And if you don't feel that way and you're in law enforcement, then you're doing something wrong.
Thank you. Next is Eric Boss.
Good evening. Again, I would echo the thank you for allowing me to be here and taking me on the same journey. It's been a good one. As most of you know from the questions, I began my career 21 years ago in law enforcement. I've worked for a sheriff's office and two different police departments. I've also worked for some college safety teams while I was in college. So I believe I have a very diverse background in law enforcement. I currently serve as a chief of police in Eastern Colorado. I also serve as the accreditation and professional standards chair for the state of Colorado, which means I am considered a subject matter expert on policy and procedures. I wouldn't claim that title myself, but I do have a lot of experience working on policy development, and working with community groups to formulate policy. I am just very excited for this opportunity, and I believe I have a lot to offer to the city of Fairbanks. So, thank you.
Thank you. Next is Ron Dupuy.
Thank you. My name is Ron Dupuy. I'm currently the acting deputy chief with the Fairbanks Police Department. I was born and raised here in Fairbanks. I grew up over on the west side, went to Wood River Elementary School, Monroe Middle School, graduated from West Valley. In 2000, I attended the Training Academy in Sitka, Alaska State Trooper Academy. I then moved to Dutch Harbor, where I worked on the patrol vessel Stimson. I worked out there for 2.5 years. I became a police officer in Dutch Harbor. In 2005, I got a call from a detective here in Fairbanks, asked me if I wanted to come home. I brought my wife. I jokingly say I brought the best part of Dutch Harbor back to Fairbanks with me. We have three boys together. My oldest, Ron, is getting ready to graduate in March from Lathrop, but we're extremely proud of him. And, you know, I'm extremely honored and humbled to be sitting here today and in line for this job in my hometown. I couldn't ask for anything more. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Todd Richardson.
My name is Todd Richardson, and I just want to echo the fact that it's a pleasure to be here with you today. I want to tell you how much I appreciate you playing an active role in the community and taking the time to be an active participant tonight. It really echoes well as to your community and the community and keeping everybody vetted for this position. I was born and raised in Fairbanks as well, and the funny thing, as Ron, I went to Wood River when it was a brand new school. It was the first year that they had opened it, so it makes me laugh to think about how long ago that was now. I have four brothers. I spent my first part of my life there on Galena Street, and then the last part of it was in my childhood years was spent up on the hill in Esther, Alaska there. So I worked, I kind of went down through my college ranks and worked in Las Vegas and worked in Utah. I was a sheriff for 8 years, operated a large budget and of $27.5 million under 350,000 people and had 700 employees. And what I'm looking at right now is the great opportunity to lead a great organization into the future there in Fairbanks. And again, I wanted to thank everybody for the opportunity even to be sitting here and talking with you about this. So thank you.
Thank you. And finally, Richard Sweet.
Yeah, good evening. So I have I've been the acting chief of police for the Fairbanks Police Department since August of last year. I was a deputy chief prior to that for a few months. We've brought the department through a lot of trying times here as far as communication and then administrative, and we look forward to, you know, developing that and continuing. We've moved forward already with the help of the mayor and in coordination with the city to get us to a place where we're kind of poised on keeping where diversity and inclusion is something that we have as part of our core values. What I bring to the department is 26 years of active military service. I served in as an aviator and in combat in a couple of different areas and throughout the world. I also grew up in the Detroit area. My family comes from long lines of union families. And one of the things that Detroit gives you is when people come for the auto industry, they come from all over the world and they bring those ideas with them. As far as family, we looked at Fairbanks, we enjoyed it, and we stayed in the area because of our family interactions, and Fairbanks has become our home, and we hope to stay here as the chief. Thank you.
Thank you. All, now on to the tough part, the questions. Okay, we're going to start with required question number one. We have randomly selected the order in which you will be called upon. You each will answer this question. I plan to read the question just one time, unless someone would like me to repeat the question. I can repeat part or all of the question. We will use that same method when we get to required question number two. So, question number one. Strictly regarding diversity, what have been the areas of growth you are most proud of? What have been your most challenging growth areas? What ongoing support do you see yourself needing in order to continue this growth? That's question number one. And the first candidate up is Ron Dupuy.
Thanks, Paul. So I want to talk about this question in two different areas, departmentally and personally. Departmentally, I think the most challenging area for growth is for us to try and get our department to diversely represent the community in which we live and work. This has been a task that every administration that I've served under has had. It's obviously a long-term goal, and I have several ideas on recruiting in order to try and reach this goal. We have the University of Alaska Fairbanks right down the road from us, which houses a uniquely diverse group of students readying themselves to enter the workforce. With criminal justice programs and with the Fairbanks Police Department working with TVC to get the police academy back up and running, the Fairbanks Police Department is a great place for them to come and work after graduating. I'd also like to collaborate with the local community and tribal leaders to steer qualified applicants towards FPD. We need to build community trust, transparency, and a welcoming environment. The area that I'm most proud of regarding diversity within the department is starting next Monday, we'll have a total of five female officers working at various levels at FPD. We have a lieutenant, a detective, and three officers. Since starting my employment with the Fairbanks Police Department in 2005, this is the largest number of female officers that we've had on staff at one time. As a chief, I want to continue this trend. And using support from community partners, I would like to extend this growth and grow the department to include the other ethnically diverse groups that we have here in the Fairbanks area. Growing a department in this way cannot be done by just one person. It's going to take a team. And that team has to include the city of Fairbanks, the Fairbanks Police Department, and the community and community leaders. Personally, as I stated before, I was born and raised here in Fairbanks. I grew up in this unique culture that is interior Alaska. It wasn't really until I became a police officer that I became aware of the diversity that we're speaking of now. You can say I was pretty naive. Working the first part of my career in the traffic unit, I heard firsthand and nationally about the concerns with racial profiling. I worked hard to self-reflect and make sure that I was treating everyone equally in how I performed my duties. When starting a law enforcement career, you tend to develop a us versus them mentality. I spoke about this in the previous interview. Early in my career, I found myself falling into this pattern. Basically, you see everyone who's not in law enforcement as a them and put them on the outside, and you kind of try and shelter yourself with people from within the police community. I attended a training very early on in my career that was provided by Gordon Graham. He's a nationally recognized risk management specialist, and he brought this mentality to light. From that class on, I made it a priority to seek friendship from outside my career field, reconnect with childhood friends, people from my church, men's hockey league, the hunting and fishing, trapping that I do. This has been an important area of growth for me throughout my career, and one that I try and pass on to the new officers. It's a mental health check for the officers. I attended the FBI National Academy last year, and I developed friendships with a core group of people. Five of us were from very, very different backgrounds and ethnicities. Captain Field is an African-American who works for the Pentagon Police. Agent Treviso is a Hispanic with the U.S. Department of Energy. Captain Curry is with Forsyth County Sheriff's Office in Georgia. And Special Agent Nicole Ferry is with CSX Railroad Police. Having developed these friendships has been invaluable for me. Talking with them, I've learned about their unique ethnic backgrounds based upon their culture and their different working and living environments. And this has expanded my understanding of them individually and professionally. Obviously, we all need to work towards ongoing personal growth, continue training in the area of bias, culture awareness, and inclusion in our community groups will not only help me grow on a personal level, but will also grow departmentally. We can continue to grow providing those trainings. That's what I got, Paul.
I'm sorry. I muted myself so you wouldn't hear my noise. Oh, well, get those mistakes out of the way at the beginning. That's what I always say. So next is Richard Sweet. You can probably read my lips, perhaps. Thank you, Richard.
I did the same thing you did. So with growth, you know, one of the things that we've dealt with here in Fairbanks, we have a lot of transient population. And, you know, coming over from the Army, from that career, you know, 26 years in the Army and then deploying, there's a difference in how the Army approaches things versus how the police department will approach a problem or, you know, do, when you're interacting with people. And what I found was we have a pretty good transient population that hangs out at the, you know, the Fairbanks rescue mission. And they seem to be where we didn't have a connection with them. I had, in 2015, I had volunteered to be a community policing officer at that time. And it was the first one in our South Side area. So there's, you know, there's about 10,000 people down in that area. And that's the area where we have a lot of the issues with transients. We have opioid use and then alcohol. And a lot of the outreach programs are there. So you got your Fairbanks Rescue Mission, you've got the food bank, and then our Fairbanks Wellness Coalition is in there. And I was driving through the area, and I just wanted to learn the area as a police officer. And you're going through, and you want to see in every day kind of what happens. And I noticed when I went by the Fairbanks Rescue Mission, nobody would smile at you. You know, and after a couple of weeks of that, you think, well, maybe, you know, I don't know what's going on. So my perspective was, as a community policing officer and coming down there, was, you know, I'm figuring out what the patterns are that are in the area. I'm seeing what's unusual in the area. And so that I'm better at it. And I think, well, maybe they'll start seeing me and recognizing me as their community policing officer. So since that wasn't working, I went in and talked with Rodney Gaskin, who was the director of the mission at the time. And we said, how do we breach that? And so we just started going to the mission and going into where the food was being served at the time the meals were served and just meeting with people. And what I found out was, although I'm sitting there thinking, okay, this is a great thing to do and you're being visible, what some of the transient population was saying that I was checking up on, that we were trying to find out what they were doing or, you know, figure out a way to arrest them. And so the miscommunication there was just not understanding on our part or on my part, is that it seemed from two different directions, from two totally different views. And so after we sat down and started talking with Rodney and asking for help to, you know, to get into those groups, we found out they're very, very diverse. You know, they're all ethnic groups. They come from all over the world. They come from all over the country to come to Fairbanks. Some came here and got stuck. Some are here. Some are just working for the summer. Some are here for long term, as well as all the other different groups that we have inside of the, you know, as far as Alaska and as far as our tribal organizations that are all over the state. From that, you use that to a growth, is that understand that what we see or what I saw as being effective was not being received as the same way by the people that you're interacting with. And so eventually, after talking to everybody and being more interactive directly, then you start getting smiles and you start getting waves as you're going through there, because I realize that we're there to help. And that's what I found. And so I learned that in the Army as well, when we were in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, reaching out to the communities, there's a different way of seeing what we do. And the important part that it comes back up continuously in this position when we're talking to different groups is that everybody sees it differently. There's the level playing field takes a common definition of what we're doing. We just sat at the NAACP had a racial justice 101 course, and we were listening to some of the moderator and the guest speakers, and there were three on there, and they came up with a definition that was completely different than I would have come up with for the same word. And that's what comes back and reiterates, is that us as officers, we have to reach across the table and understand that there's that difference. The growth area that I need to continue to grow is just those interactions, to continue to meet with people and to continue to learn that there are different experiences and understand that we have an ability to impact other people's lives, and we have to understand how they're coming from in their worldview. And so that's a challenge for myself continuously, even into your adult age. I had a commander in the Army state that, which I was, every day is a training day. You know, even when we were sitting in Iraq or Afghanistan, we're learning every day. And as a police officer, while here in Fairbanks, every day is a learning day. Every day is we gain extra knowledge. Every day we use our training and we apply it, and we take those tools, and hopefully we respond the correct way. And whenever there's a misunderstanding, we address it.
Thank you. Next, and unmoved, is Kula Black.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So I have some notes, so I'm going to use them as go-bys, but the areas of growth and diversity I think I'm most proud of is how I've assisted my police department in the relationships with the minority community. When I began my career at Mocksville, the only minority officer was one female officer that had been hired in 1998. And for me, I couldn't fathom or understand how this could be. I'd worked at so many different places and been involved with so many different groups in my various careers of, you know, in the arts and going into law enforcement. So I was challenged by the chief at the time to change it. And I immersed myself in the local culture of our minority community. I attended civic meetings, churches, youth groups, and slowly and surely I learned that the minority community didn't feel that they had a voice at our police department. And because they didn't feel they had a voice, they didn't feel that they could trust us. So I became more and more involved. I had weekly meetings with individuals and groups and invited them to participate and become more and more involved at our agency. I also became a member of the NAACP. I believe our community was really fortunate, because as this was happening, it was 2 years prior to the incident and the tragic event of George Floyd. And we were very fortunate that relationship had started to grow and build, because we didn't have riots and we didn't have looting. We had conversations. We had peaceful protests where these minority groups reached out to the chief and I, not only to invite us to participate, but to speak at these events. I think that the best thing that we did following the event was having a meeting with those local minority leaders, educators and youth, and had an open forum to sort of discuss and understand, you know, what were we going to do to prevent this from ever happening here? What did we already have in place? And from that, we created the group, the Mocksville Community Task Force, which was made up of those people that showed up there that day. And we've given them a voice inside of our police department. They assist with our recruiting and training efforts. We discuss policy and procedure. They sit in on hiring processes. They assist and make recommendations about community engagements and events. Not only is this going to assist us in our diversity within the department, but it enhances the relationships we have outside to help reduce crime. You know, in a lot of areas in bigger cities where they don't have a good relationship with the minority community, you see these events happen, these crimes, and the community doesn't want to share information or intelligence with the police department. But we're fortunate. We've come so far that when we have an incident, we can't keep up with the amount of information that flows in from outside. I guess the moving forward, the ongoing support I'm going to need to continue doing this is to continue to be involved and be present. It's not something you can become complacent about. You continue to grow because you continue to stay involved. I think a huge problem of where we got to with these issues in law enforcement is because law enforcement became complacent. What Mr. Dupuy, you know, spoke about, the us versus them, the warrior mindset, that is not what Sir Robert Peel intended for when law enforcement came to be. And I think that we have to ensure that we move away from that and that we stay engaged with these areas of our community and ensure that they have as much of a voice as anybody else. It's going to assist us in all matters. And I think personally for me, you know, I have been very fortunate. You know, I come from a very, very diverse background, and I've, especially being surrounded by artists my whole life from all walks of the world, I've been fortunate to understand and be self-aware, but to continue to engage in my own community has allowed me to have foresight and more opportunities to grow and to share with my officers and other members of our community.
Thank you. Todd Richardson, you are next.
Thank you. I regard this as a really crucial question in how we develop for the future as organizations. Strictly regarding diversity, I'm going to talk about a few things I think that's directly related initially to who I am and how I was raised. I was, again, born and raised in Fairbanks. I had a very diverse family and if you ever have a couple hours, I'll sit down with you and go through the diversity of my family. But that being said, when I moved forward and went through college, I have lived in diversity virtually my whole life, playing football through college and in going into law enforcement, working in Las Vegas. If you ever want to see a really diverse group of people, you go to Las Vegas because you see the extremes of everything in Las Vegas. And working there, you get a good understanding of what diversity really means. That being said, when you start talking about diversity in your community and how do you develop a department that has diversity and what my areas of growth were, I moved into the office of sheriff, and we had zero communication with our public. And the community that we had was very understanding about it, although the ability for us to do our job correctly really wasn't there. So I implemented several programs. Just to give you an example, we put in place a program by which we called it a Citizens Academy, and we were able to bring people in of all walks of life and lived in the community, and we were able to make that and build it up into, in 2015, we won the National Citizens Academy Award for the United States. And it was because we did it as a teamwork. It wasn't just the law enforcement. It wasn't just sheriffs. It was the fire department was involved with that. We had it involved with, you know, the county attorney's office. We had just every police department in the community was involved with it. And because it was a team effect and it was a teamwork type of an effort, it made it so we opened up many avenues. And we as well, because we had that that communication line built up, had no problems in our community when things occurred after George Floyd's incident. We also had several other. We have a program by which moms and family members can come in and get their children fingerprinted, picture, and DNA done on them, and make it so that we have tracking mechanisms and mothers can feel better. We had an Explorer program that would reach out to differing areas of our community and start those diversity and inclusion type of programs to bring youth into law enforcement so that we could lay the framework to where in 5 years we were pulling off of our investments that we had made over a longer period of time. And those things are playing out as we speak right now. And the department is reaping the rewards of the things that we were able to do and create, you know, prior. The challenging parts of growth and that I see is the fact that for every step that we make, there are people around the United States that make some bad steps, and it really reflects poorly on law enforcement in general across the board. So we have to work twice as hard in order to make sure that we present a good foot forward for our community and make it so that we can develop these type of programs moving into the future and not working just for today and tomorrow, but working for a year, 2 years, 5 years down the road. Ultimately, the ongoing support we would need is just that, to have an open mind in making and developing these programs to where we have every aspect of what we're going to be doing in the future laid out in front of the city council. So they know our long-term goals. They know our 5-year, 3-year, 10-year goals. And every time I've done it in the past in operating that, you know, the sheriff's office, they were very, very gracious and was able to put their input in and make a program that in general made it so that, again, we made some good programs and are interacting with the community. Thank you.
Thank you. And Derek Voss.
Good evening again. I would start way back in my college days on just a moment that I was very proud of for growth in diversity. When I first attended college, my first roommate and I were selected at random. He was from South Korea. He did not speak English. I've never been to South Korea and I did not speak Korean. And here we are, two very different individuals, very different cultures, sharing a room together. That was just a trial by immersion for me, and learning to get along with somebody with a very different culture, different background was tremendous. We definitely stayed friends. There was no animosity there, but it was a great time of growth for me personally, just to experience and see a very different side of the world. I would move on into my professional career, and I'm a firm believer that a law enforcement agency should represent the community it serves. So as I moved up through the ranks in the sheriff's office, it was crucial to me to recruit folks who are reflective of the community. To that end, I tried very hard to make sure we even had a balance. So when the community is 40% of one culture, I like to see a workforce that's 40% of that same culture. Working hard to bring those different diverse folks into the department was crucial to me, and I think a strength of the department. Where I currently work, we have many different languages spoken within our community, and so it's crucial to me to recruit officers and retain those officers who can speak the language and communicate with folks in their native tongue, if you will. Our department, where I currently serve, also has quite a bit of gender differences reflected in it, which again is reflective of our community and I think crucial. So I would consider all of those successes. Areas where I still need to seek growth, I think I would say finding diversity. It's one thing to know that the community is diverse and to know what those different groups are, but it's a whole nother thing to seek them out actively, to engage with those groups, to communicate with those people on their level, and to try hard. I've found that as we bring people into the department who are reflective of the different cultures and communities around us, it's easy to depend on them as the outreach coordinators for the department, but still as a leader, I have the obligation to be a part of that too. And I would say that's an area where I still am growing and need to continue to grow. As far as support from the community, I think it's very important in any new community, in any community where you've been a while, to engage the different cultures and the different communities and to continue to learn. It's not enough, as I was just saying, to know that they exist. It's a huge piece of that is learning and understanding. And I can't necessarily be a part of it, but I can strive to understand and be a part of the different cultures as much as possible. So I think the support comes from the community, from the different groups, and from leaders within those cultures and those communities. That's all I've got. Thank you.
Thank you. And on the question two, and this is multi-parts. Question two, can you share an example of a time when you were in a situation, a meeting, an event, for example, and you were not part of the community that was getting together, either in terms of identity, geographic scope, or otherwise? The questions, how were you, conscientious of how you showed up in that space or that conversation? How did you notice and practice awareness of any privileges you held, and how did that inform how you showed up? What personal growth happened for you from this experience, and what personal growth is still happening for you in this regard? So, number one up is Richard Sweet.
So I wanted to, looking at this question, I wanted to share another Army experience, although it has ties to the local community when we dealt with the missing and murdered Indigenous persons here. When we were in Iraq, we had a convoy that all of a sudden, some of the small kids were throwing rocks at them, and we couldn't understand why they all of a sudden out of nowhere they started doing that. And so we were brought in to come talk to the, we were standing up a local police, national police agency in the area that was going to take control of that area. And so we used them with their contacts on the political side. And what we were able to do was get a meeting in a mosque, which was kind of interesting, with the local imams, which was a great honor because we couldn't, normally you're not allowed to come in. I mean, we're a Christian organization or a non-Muslim, you know, group as the U.S. Army, and we're coming in and we're being invited into a mosque to have these discussions. So, you know, coming in and answering it, you know, how conscious was I showed up in that conversation? It was huge. We were still, this was 2010, we were still taking direct action with insurgents. And so everybody's up in body armor, and we've got everything, we're in full armored vehicles. And so we have to dismount and get out of and go into the mosque, but we wanna not insult them in any way because we're their guests. And so what that comes out to be is that space is theirs. And so we shed off as much as we can. We just get down to just our regular uniforms without weapons, without the body armor or helmets. And we go and we sit down with them. And in that meeting, one of the things that we learned about was tactical patience. You know, you listen to them culturally, and we allowed them to direct the conversation because we knew what our security requirements are. We just didn't know what was going on in the local community of their area. And so what came out of it was that after listening and talking to them for a couple hours and sitting there and eating with them, which was a big cultural awareness piece, was that you know, eating was involved in every piece of that. some kind of meal. So whatever it was at the time of day, there was always a meal involved with it. And the part was, we found out was that the kids were throwing the rocks because the convoys were going by when the mosque was going to was calling and doing a service, you know, doing their prayers. And so just a simple conversation with them was what we found out was that was what was causing it. The privilege that we brought in that is we were the U.S. Army. We were in control of it. You know, we were working through Iraq and it was still an occupied territory. We were trying to hand it over. But ultimately, the end state of this is we want them to take it over. We want to be in partnership with them. And the partnerships were important. And that political, as well as the religious and then the non-religious, the side of the community members understand that we were there, again, to help. And it's very similar to the community policing example I used prior to that, is that once you go in and talk and you have a common a balance between how you understand one another or just come to a common understanding, it gets rid of those misunderstandings and those miscommunications. The growth that I got from that was just exactly that, was that you have to be more, as somebody who's in a position of authority, whatever it is, you have to involve everybody. It's a group effort, and that plays well with the police departments. So the Missing Murdered Indigenous Persons group we've been involved in, what we didn't understand with that part from a law enforcement piece was that they're concerned as a group as a whole. So the tribal communities, the tribal area, considers themselves as all part of the family. Now, law enforcement has the restrictions, some liability restrictions, and we owe it to the victims of a missing person or the victim if it's criminal to bring the best case forward. And so the conversation we had with Koyukuk, which was the most recently, was about a three-hour conversation by Zoom. And that part of it was, again, was that communication. It draws back that time from Iraq where you have to sit down with people and discuss and listen to what their concerns are. The growth that comes from it is you're still growing with that, and I'm still, you're still applying those lessons that we all need to come to understanding of those common definitions. And we all have to reach out, and we're all part of one community. And with that, everybody sees things differently, and then we need to have a common goal. And once we get that, then we can move it forward. The department has to move forward to that. It's a part of the community. It's not a separation from the community. It's a we and us problem when we come to diversity and developing those relationships, those long-term relationships. And the training that we have and the equipping that we have to do has to support that.
Thank you. Ron Dupi, you are next.
Thanks, Paul. So in January of 2020, I had the honor of attending the FBI National Academy in Quantico, Virginia. When I arrived, I was assigned a room and a roommate, and my roommate happened to be Charles Asaba. He was from Uganda. Being paired with Charles as a roommate throughout my time at the National Academy, I was able to reflect on my life in the U.S. and compared that to his drastically different life in Uganda and several of the other foreign classmates that we had. But despite our differences, I realized that as people, we still had many things in common, like being officers, fathers, husbands, and of course, both of us had drastically different time zones from Virginia. I've had time to think and identify privileges that I may have and continue to work on understanding them and how they may affect others. I understand that I'm a white male in an authority role as a police officer and my socioeconomic status. The event that I want to talk about happened in Fairbanks here on January 23rd, a couple Saturdays ago. I attended a vigil with Acting Chief Sweet and the mayor at the Chief Peter John Tribal Building. The vigil was to bring awareness to a number of missing people in our community. A large percentage were from the Native community. Surrounded by a large group of community members from the Native community, community leaders, and families of the missing people, I realized that as they spoke, the position that I held at the event, that of being the Deputy Chief for the Fairbanks Police Department, was definitely a minority position in that group. I listened to everyone speak, and I heard what they had to say and how they felt about their loved ones being missing and what my department, my officers were doing or not doing in their perspective. I recognized the difference and the gaps that we had in our relationship within the two communities, the police department and the Native community. It was humbling to hear some of the issues that people had, and this reinforced me that we need to have, as a police department, a connection with our community partners and have an open dialogue. At the end of that event, I reached out to Chief P.J. Simon of the Tanana Chiefs to meet and talk about the issues that were raised and to come up with strategies to bridge the gaps that were communicated, not only by the families, but also by the Native leadership. Since that time period, we've met with the other local law enforcement agencies, the FBI, North Pole Police, Fair Range Police. We've also had dialogue with the Native community leaders to discuss better ways that we can communicate specifically regarding the missing people and issues that they bring up with regards to the police department and how we can work to come together for a singular goal of unity. You know, we're going to continue to have these meetings and mend these relationships which have been unsettled in the past. I can't fix the past. I can only plan for the future. And as Chief of the Fairbanks Police Department, I will strive to communicate openly with our community partners. I'll listen to their needs and work with them to bridge the gaps and move forward as a unified community.
Thank you. Derek Moss, you are next.
Thank you. Several years ago, I had the opportunity to go to Kazakhstan for 9 weeks with my church on a mission trip. My primary job there was teaching English, and I was in a city where there was about an equal mix of Kazakhs and Russians, and the two cultures do not like each other. There's a lot of hostility there. Excuse me. And all high school age students are required to learn English or German. So here I am in a classroom teaching a group of students who don't want to be with each other because they represent different cultures. And I don't speak either of those languages. I don't speak Kazakh or Russian. So for me, it was a huge eye-opening experience just to see where I came from and trying to understand why there was conflict between them, not in a position to resolve it, but at least to try to help everyone get along so that we could learn English and meet a common goal. Immediately getting off the plane when I arrived there, I was very aware of coming from a different socioeconomic background. Most people who live in Kazakhstan have two pairs of clothes. I had with me many more pairs than that. So from the moment I was there until I left, there was a marked difference between me and everyone there. I am proud to say that by the time I left, I encountered some other Americans and they couldn't tell a difference between me and the local folks. So I do think I learned tremendously just to be a part of the culture and experience the culture and jump all in. a few years ago, I had a similar opportunity and went to Uganda for 2 weeks, also on a mission trip. And in Uganda, it's similar to what one of the other candidates referenced, where you're in a Muslim culture representing the Christian West. And so there's a lot of hostility and a lot of antagonism just because of who you are. And showing up to help them wasn't always well received. so for me, there was a lot of growth in both of those experiences just to learn and understand different cultures, to try to understand how to assimilate and find common grounds. Just a simple conversation about soccer even can break the ice and start building bridges and building relationships. To me, police work is all about relationships. And I think the community and the police officers build trust by having personal relationships with one another. So finding a common ground and bridging the gaps that are created, whether it be diversity or socioeconomic status, bridging those gaps and building relationships, I think, is crucial. And that's my expectation of all officers who work for me. I think one of the biggest things that I took away from both of those experiences was recognizing that as humans, we typically fear things that are different. And those fears are usually grounded in no solid basis whatsoever. So for me, a huge step of growth was recognizing that I fear things I don't have to. There's no reason to fear other cultures. There's no reason to fear other people just because they are different than I am. And so stepping past that fear and putting it aside was a tremendous amount of growth for me. And I think I bring that to the table with all my officers, helping them recognize too that a lot of our biases, a lot of our fears, if you will, are not rooted in any reason. And so it's a tremendous growth for all of us to step past that after we recognize those and recognize that they're not necessary. And then building those relationships with all the community members. I think that's growth for the whole community, not just the police department, not just the individual officers, but the community as a whole has to grow and move forward. And I think just to wrap that up, I bring that drive, that passion to learn and experience other cultures with me. And I would encourage that in the officers to step out of their comfort zones and embrace different things and be surprised at what happens and how you develop great relationships through that. Thank you.
Thank you. Todd Richardson.
Well, it's actually a real privilege listening to everybody's stories here. I'll reflect one that I had, but it doesn't have anything to do with Afghanistan or Russia or anything like that. When I was 18 years old, I served a two-year mission for my church, and I was sent down to Laredo, Texas, and I told people that Laredo was about as far as you can get of getting out of the United States without really getting out of the United States, and I was okay with that, you know. But I remember being placed I got off the airplane, was brought down, and was placed in a meeting with several members of the church that was in there with me, and they all spoke Spanish. I didn't speak Spanish. I just knew enough to get me in trouble, and that was it. And I remember how it felt being the person in the room that couldn't understand what was going on. I looked and felt a little bit different, kind of for the first time in my life understood, even though I came from very diverse backgrounds, what it was like to kind of be the odd man out, to feel like you were put in the corner, didn't understand what was going on, the things that were going on would confuse me trying to understand what was what they were trying to accomplish. And it was only after being in there a little bit that an individual saw me there and came over and kind of nudged up against me and started telling me exactly what was going on. So I had a base understanding and made it so that I could understand what they were trying to accomplish and they could understand where I was coming from. And it taught me a great lesson. And the lesson that I pulled out of there and what it showed to me was how important it was that everybody, that our stakeholders have an opportunity to speak. And how important communication is, and that feeling that if you don't have that ability to speak and to communicate, that feeling that you get of just being pushed aside and confused and everything else. There are so many cultures in our communities today that it's important to open up those avenues of communication, which is exactly why I harped on and put in so many programs when I was the sheriff. And for 8 years, we brought in several programs. The one that I was most proud of was not only the Citizens Academy, but the program we had where I spent a day a month and we would go to businesses throughout the whole county and allowed people to come in and talk to myself, my staff, talk to, you know, deputies that work the road and open up those line of communications and made sure that we didn't leave anybody sitting in the corner not knowing and or understanding what was going on. It gave them the ability to express what their interests were, what their thoughts were, what their fears were. And we were able to mold and create our patrols and our services to fit their needs. One of the things that I never knew about was talking with a big Polynesian guy. The guy was actually about three times my size. He could, you know, pump me across the room and not even blink an eye. But one of the things that we learned was that when we arrived on scene of an incident with a Polynesian individual, you couldn't talk to the wife without the husband being there. That was a big cultural no-no. And we didn't understand while everybody was, you know, getting upset. We would go to family disturbances. We would go right up to the wife who was involved in there. And the kids that called us would turn on us. And it was only after these lines of communication that we understood and we figured out what we were doing wrong. And that's really the type of things and the experiences that I want to be able to bring forward is open those line of communications, make sure we tear down those walls of miscommunication so that we can provide a better service to the community of Fairbanks. Thanks.
Thank you. And Kula Black, your turn.
So my approach to my answer for this question is a little bit different. I hope that it's effective and gets my point across for the listeners. I guess this situation for me would be my first safe meeting in my community. We had a heroin overdose death of a minority member of our community, and I became very, very close with the victim's mother, who introduced me to a gentleman named Jason Imes, and she told me that he wanted to create something, some type of project in the community, to assist those suffering from addiction as well as educate the community about it. That's when Substance Abuse Family Education was born. When I entered our first meeting, it was every race, age, gender you could imagine, and the only thing in common that everyone in the room had was that they suffered from addiction. I was very conscientious at first because there were people in there I knew didn't trust me because I was law enforcement. I showed up to the first meeting in uniform. There was actually one person there that I had arrested in the past. I had to practice my awareness and to take a moment to self-reflect and meditate. But I knew that I could identify and I had a story to share and to connect with as well because my mother suffers from addiction and mental health issues. I was immediately aware in this meeting that I had an immense amount of privilege. And I have to take a step back, you know, when you get into that, because the last thing you want to do with any group when you recognize that is that you don't want to be, nobody wants to feel pity from you. What they want is empathy. I think that there's a big difference between the two, and that's what I had to recognize to identify, you know, just like I have to with my own mother. You know, it's not about pity. It's about finding empathy and identifying and connecting with people. The opposite of addiction isn't sobriety, it's connection. I made sure during my experience to genuinely connect with people, offering my personal phone number and offering to meet with people to discuss issues. And the growth from this experience changed my understanding of addiction even further, even though I had grown up around it. I used my knowledge and my position to, you know, provide real help to those suffering in my community. I became a SMART recovery facilitator. I taught the weekly meetings. I became a life coach and did one-on-one mentorings to the people within the program. And I incorporated, again, using law enforcement, not only in my position, but also with my other officers, to engage with those that they would interact with at a patrol level that suffered from addiction to give them a better opportunity, to give them resources versus just, you know, arresting our way out of this problem that continues to go on in our nation. That moment of feeling like I didn't belong turned into a community network for me of people that I'm proud today to call, you know, some of my best friends. And when you fix one person, you don't want to say fix, I'm sorry. You basically, you let the real person be revealed. You know, you have the person who addiction isn't who they are. We can remove the drugs. We can remove the alcohol. It takes about 7 days. What we have to, you know, what we have to correct is giving resources to that person. I guess my personal growth is advocating for those suffering from addiction. It's a daily task. I have to always be up on new trends, reading media, online articles, engaging with resources locally and above and beyond, and try to find additional resources always to partner with. My experiences within the group have definitely changed the way that I approach any individual or group of people that are different than me. I've traveled all over the world, and I think that, you know, finding connection and embracing what's different about people is what makes us, you know, what makes being human wonderful, is the experience of getting to meet and understand and learn about others that are different than you.
Thank you. That completes the second round of questioning regarding the first, the required questions. We're on to the obstacle questions. And this each question will be different. And again, randomly selected. And I will first go with, tell you who's up and which question they have and read the question to them. And the first lucky contestant is Ron Dupuy. And Ron, you have a question that's numbered 7 on the list. What does cultural operational transparency mean to you, and how would you promote and enforce that within your department?
Okay. Operational transparency is operating within the view of the public. It's a pretty simple concept, I think. If it's not forbidden by law, an officer safety risk or a risk to jeopardize or interfere with the case, then we should be transparent with the community. I think we have started down a road to make the department more transparent. We've been working on our policies and procedures. Chief Sweet's been working on getting those online. We have them online, so anybody that wants to review those can go online, take a look at them. They're on the City of Fairbanks website. We're doing a lot of things as far as our use of force reviews and our complaint process to make that more transparent and engaging with the community as far as how that process works, going through the process with them and notifying them when the investigation is complete and what the outcome of those investigations are. We talked about earlier, we talked about the meetings that we've been having with the community leaders, with the Native organizations. All those meetings are important, and we need to continue meeting with all the community leaders and developing a plan to go forward, having input from them on what the issues in their individual communities are, with their organizations, what the issues are, what they need from the police department, and how we can work together to accomplish those goals. I think the City of Fairbanks, or excuse me, the Fairbanks Police Department has in the past dropped the ball on this in some ways. We have a very small department. We have a limited staff, and sometimes things fall short. And I think the community outreach within these communities is one of the things that we've fallen short on here lately. And it's my goal to get those programs back in place, to get the communication back in line with the community leaders, and figure out what it is that they're communities need from us and how we can provide the best service possible within the community, operating transparently.
Thank you. Second up, Richard Sweet. Richard Sweet, you've drawn question number 9. Can you describe how you might show up representing FPD with individuals who might have divergent viewpoints or strategies? How would you prioritize leading with FPD's values?
Yeah, you know, it's part of that goes back to some of the questions beforehand is, you know, how do you show up to that? When we were talking about the missing murdered Indigenous persons website and the add in the Crisis Now models that we're working with right now, we come with a law enforcement, you know, point of view. And so FPD, you know, prides itself on or has prided itself on taking every one of the missing persons seriously just in the communication of that, of how you reach out to the families. Ron just talked about, you know, there's a limitation to us on how far law enforcement can go because we owe that to the victims of somebody that's a victim of a crime. But we also owe to the family, you know, honor, dignity, and respect. We can't just release things that we may know about the individual that the public doesn't need to know. You know, that may be a mental health background or a medical background that we have to consider when we're looking for somebody. So coming in with that, what we should have as a police department is to honor that, is to remember that that's one of the most important parts of it. Is we, it's not just about getting the facts of a case, but it's you know, when you're talking about interaction with different communities, but knowing what they need as well so that they're satisfied and that we talk about not having those miscommunications. With the missing and murdered Indigenous persons groups and the community wealth, you know, what do we do with somebody that has a mental health issue and, you know, they're out and we just don't know where they're at? Alaska is a large area that isn't covered by cell phones. We just don't have those coverages. So we are committed, as far as a department and our values, is that every person is an individual. It doesn't matter who they are or where they come from, and we have to communicate that. That's on us. That's on us as a department to communicate that back to tribal communities and to our local populations, anybody who feels disenfranchised, because I want them to be able to say, no, I want to go to the police department and give them the information. I don't want to do that through a third party because that may delay some of those interactions. So showing up with individuals is probably the most important piece that our officers can do on the street. One of the best things that we've ever had was somebody say, well, I remember you as an officer as you move up through the ranks, or I remember you when you were part of the community policing, or I remember you when you showed up at Juneteenth, the celebration, or when you went to the intertribal. I remember that part. And you're somebody that maybe I have a little bit of trust. And that's the piece that we have to have. It's the trust that our community has to have in our law enforcement agencies and our officers. It's important in how we hire. It's important who we hire. It's not important to fill the jobs as much as it is who fills it. And then that we maintain that and we review it. And so that's the important piece. And we have to instill that. The trust comes from repairing relationships that we had no part of. You know, if we're only here for a short period of time, and 20 years ago something happened in another state or another agency that makes somebody distrust the police, well, that falls on us. We're ambassadors of our group. But the Fairbanks Police Department is a community's police department. We're different than anywhere else, and we meet those needs that the community has to or demands of us. And we get that through a lot of different ways. And part of reaching out is just understanding where people come from. And I know I keep kind of going back on that, but it's a lesson that you learn when you have those interactions directly on the street. It's a lesson that you learn when you meet with different communities, that everybody sees things a little bit differently. And for the department, that's important for us to remember. We don't know our implicit biases until we come up and face, you know, smack dab in front of it. I don't know that I have a bias of A or B until I experience that. And so the continued training that we have for the department and the core values is dignity and respect. and dignity and respect for the people that we are interacting with. And that is the most important thing as a philosophy that I would bring, or that as a department, and I know as Ron believes it as well, is that that dignity and respect and that communication is the most important thing we have. And we can't rely on catchy phrases or catchy programs. We have to be out in the public, and we have to do something. There has to be something behind that. You can say community policing all day, but if you don't actually reach out there and you don't go and do the community-oriented policing, it doesn't do any good. You can go join organizations, or you can be, you know, you can just go talk to people. But if you don't get your officers out there and you don't do something about it, then you're useless. And for me, that's the driving force behind why I want to be a chief.
Thank you. Next up, Derek Boss. Derek, you have question number 3. What concerns do you have in regarding Fairbanks as a diverse community, and what support do you think you'll need in order to be successful?
I think my concerns with the diverse community go back to trust between law enforcement and the various pieces of the community, and why is there a lack of trust? It concerns me that that's been kind of a focal point of this hiring process. So clearly there's a problem there. My goal would be to try to rectify that and rebuild trust between the police and the community. As I mentioned earlier, I think this is the root of this is relationships between individual officers and individuals in the community. As you build those individual relationships, you begin to build trust. And then you have trust between the police and the different cultures, and you have a larger volume of trust. But as a whole, we're a community. I think it's a mistake to separate out different cultures and the police. We are combined together. We are the community. There's not one group that is, there's not one department or one entity that is representative of the community. We are all the community. So to me, it's crucial that we overcome those challenges of bias, of defined diversity, and come together and say, we are the city of Fairbanks. We are the community of Fairbanks. We are, commonly, we are all people together. And yes, we have differences. Yes, we value different things, but that doesn't make any one of us wrong. That doesn't make any one of us better or more important than the other folks. I think it's crucial that we focus on coming together and building that community. To be successful, I think the first piece of that is reaching out to the different groups, breaking down the barriers, and we need the support of each group, each culture, to come together. An example I will give from my current department, we have a small group of Somalis here, and that's a different culture. I know nothing of Somali culture, so the burden is on me to reach out and try to build that bridge and identify leaders in the community who can tell me, here's what we value as Somalis, here's what's important to us. As one of the candidates mentioned earlier, speaking to the wife of a Somali man is very offensive to them. How do we navigate around that when we have a call to that home for a family disturbance? And using them as part of the solution. I can create answers all day long, but that doesn't make them right. I need the assistance of the community to find the right answer and the right solution and to educate the officers. So I think it's crucial to have the support from every entity in the community, everybody who is diverse, and again, bring us all together to work as one entity and one community. I think, again, just back to relationships, that's where we get our support, is those individual relationships between the officers, myself, if I were the chief, and leaders in the community. And then collectively, we move forward and overcome the challenges facing us. Thank you.
Next up, Cooper Black, you have question number 5. How will you foster team building at the Fairbanks Police Department, and what will you do to ensure that it is successful?
A variety of ideas for team building. And in team building, I think you build more self-awareness for individual officers and your squads and your platoons. I think that there needs to be an awareness and mutual training and emotional intelligence. One team building exercise I do with my officers is to do the DISC analysis and to give them projects to do based on where they fall on the DISC. I think that creating a time and a space where you can have fun with it, with team building, but also to encourage communication, because that allows for the officers to feel that they are part of a team. They have to feel safe and they have to feel appreciated. Yearly, I do climate surveys and ride-alongs with the officers. I spoke earlier about open door policy, but in creating different environments where they can feel free to be themselves and to work together, whether it be something like emotional intelligence training, which is something I'm trying to actually bring in at the corporate level next year, as well as other team building groups and exercises that are available to us, whether it be outdoor team groups or different group team challenges. But it all comes back to having communication with your officers, knowing who they are, what they want, what they need. And I think in building the teams, not only will you have more successful officers, but you're going to create a better mental health environment for them. In team building, you also are able to reduce stress. And I think also with team building within the department, that you should encourage other team building exercises involving the community as well. I think one of the big items I'm pushing forward in this year's budget is to invite dedication to community to come and do biannual or quarterly classes, first with the officers, but then to include community members to talk about the basis of implicit bias and training and what about empathy and what we can all do better, not just as officers, but as people working together. And when situations are difficult, finding strengths and how to communicate within the agency and outside within the community.
Thank you. Todd Richardson, you get the last of the questions. It's question number 8. How would you go about planning and implementing a long-range strategy for the police department?
First, I want to again thank you for this opportunity. One of the things that I just want to throw out there is I've kind of been at the bottom of the barrel this whole time, being the last. So I'm down in Las Vegas right now. I'm not going to go gambling because I think I'm going to lose every round. So that being said, to describe how I might kind of put together a budget. My budgets that I put together were off of 5 divisions. I operated a $27.5 million budget, plus or minus. So really, when I start looking at how budgets are spent, it comes back down to, it's not really the matter of that you aren't given enough money. It's what you do with that money that counts. It's where you prioritize the money. And as the chief, obviously, all the policies that will be evaluated in the areas that we're lacking and the group of representatives from the office is myself and the representative from HR will get together and we'll focus on a plan and put this group together and come up with a plan that looks for the areas that we think we can best spend our money in order to be able to recruit and retain the qualified officers that we have. I've done it before. This is nothing different than what I've done before, and we'll just implement it there in Fairbanks. It's being able to get a diverse group of individuals, all stakeholders, to make sure that when we spend the money, we're focusing in on the areas that we're going to give us the biggest bang for our buck. A lot of the things I used down here that didn't cost us anything was, job fairs, going to colleges. I have several contacts, I guess, if you will, in police academies throughout the United States. those are the areas that you can pinpoint right in to what you're looking for, and the quality of the, and the type of diversity of person that you're looking for, and be able to not spend very much money and still get a great return on your investment. One of the things that I functioned with was the fact that our, myself included, were not only police officers, we were paramedics. So we put a little twist on what we were looking for. Not only were we looking to hire and maintain and retain qualified officers, but we needed to do that with qualified paramedics. They served a dual role as a, both a police officer and a paramedic. It can be done. When I started off, we had 27 open positions. When I finished my last day in office there, we had one. So it just matters where you're going to put the priority and working together as a team to make sure that everybody has the say in where we're going to focus first, where we're going to focus second, and where we're looking to get the biggest bang for our buck. Ultimately, that is, and working as a team should be and will be the priority of myself as the chief of Fairbanks Police Department. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, candidates. That ends the question portion of this forum. You now get 2 minutes to sum up your final closing statement. And we're just going to turn around and go in the reverse alphabetical order and go back to my list. That gives Richard Sweet the chance to go first.
Thank you. So, you know, in the end, what with the department, what we're facing here in Fairbanks is we lost a lot of experience in our officers due to retirements and some moving on. And so, you know, when we look at what we're trying to do here in the development, we're looking at redeveloping from the start all the way up. And so we look at our, our instructor levels and trying to develop that ownership for the officers into their own training and then how they invest their time. And we have a number of officers that, they're just now having babies. So we're such a young force and we don't have a lot of life experiences. And so with our training, we're buying time for those life with the training to get those life experiences. Young officers can become very authoritarian when they don't have the experience to draw on when they go and they deal with somebody that's in the having family issues because they just don't have it. And so that's the focus of it. We need to build. But the nice part about that is it's a blank canvas for us to grow and for us to re-picture of how the department is. And so we look forward to that. We look forward to meeting the needs of the community. And part of that, like I said, is the training and the planning and working with the city as we have been and just to continue to go forward as we've the plan that we've laid out in over the last 5 months. Thank you.
Thank you. Todd Richardson, you're next.
In summation, and I've been in law enforcement for 31 years. I served the last over the last 15 years in administrative roles, with the last 8 years being a sheriff of a large county. In that time, I served 35 years as a paramedic in that duality of the roles I talked about. I've been, the director of a large organization in a population of 350,000 people. I had 700 plus employees that I was responsible for, operated a $27.5 million budget. I could lay all this stuff out, but really what it comes down to is I have the education. I've got a master's degree in public administration. I'm working on a PhD in organizational management. I have the desire, the education, the team building experience, the vision to lead Fairbanks Police Department. Otherwise, I wouldn't be, putting in. I think that this organization is poised to do great things, and I want to be able to lead them down that direction and being able to accomplish those tasks. One of the sayings that my wife keeps on telling me all the time, and I think it's a great saying, it's amazing what you can accomplish if you don't care who gets credit. And that is so true. Harry Truman said that. It is so true that if you work as a team, and you don't care who gets the credit, you can accomplish great things. And that's what I would like to do as your chief. Thank you.
Thank you. Ron Doobie, you are next.
Thank you. So I've been in law enforcement for over 20 years, 16 with the Fairbanks Police Department, building positive relationships within this community with the leaders, the local, state, and national law enforcement agencies. I've had extensive leadership training and essentially have been preparing for this position my entire career. I was born and raised here in Fairbanks, and I love this community. I understand the impact that the darkness and the cold temperatures have as it relates to life and work here in the Fairbanks community. I understand the issues that face the city with the budgetary concerns, budgetary restrictions, and issues facing the police department. I have realistic ideas on how to create solutions for those issues, and I have a strong understanding of the inter-community issues needing to be addressed and the willingness to work to create those solutions. The most important thing is being born and raised here. I've chosen to live, work, and raise my family here, and ultimately, I want to retire here. I want Fairbanks to be a place that we can all be proud to call home. I believe I have the tools, the experience to build a team, to inspire officers, to cultivate inclusion, to continue to develop transparency at FPD and build relationships with local organizations, the city of Fairbanks, and the residents of this community. And finally, I just want to thank my family and the outpouring of support that I've received from local individuals in this endeavor. I truly appreciate everything the kind words that have been spoken and everything that everybody's done to help me with this process.
Thank you. Derek Boss.
Thank you very much. And I would just like to wrap up by saying to everyone and the community, thank you for considering me as a candidate. I would say based on everything I saw tonight, it's a difficult choice between five very qualified people, and I'm glad I'm on this side of it and not a decision maker. But I would describe myself as a progressive, proactive servant leader. And I think those are all things that are needed and crucial to the city of Fairbanks. I would say I'm progressive in that I like doing new things. I don't want to be a trend follower. I want to be a trendsetter. Building bridges within the community is setting new trends. It's creating new paths, and that's something I'm very good at and I desire to do. I'm proactive. I am involved. I don't stand back and let things fester. I like to address problems before they become problems. And I would say I'm a servant leader. I am there to serve the people. I'm there to serve the department. For me, that's crucial. That's what law enforcement is all about, is service. The second piece is relationships. And I think building relationships is crucial to the success of any law enforcement officer. I am grateful for this opportunity. I look at Fairbanks as a place where I would also like to finish out my career if I'm selected. And just thank you very much.
Thank you. And Kula Black.
Thank you again for having me. This has been an exceptional experience. I just want to leave you with this. The face of law enforcement and the faces of the leaders are changing. The way that things have been done can't be done going forward. It has to be different. And going off of the tail of what Mr. Boss said, I consider myself a progressive leader, a transformational leader as well. And I have the track record in my own community. A lot of people can talk about some of the national programs as far as community engagement, Coffee with a Cop, Citizens Academy. Yes, we do all of those things. But you have to think outside of the box in these times, because what we've done in the past isn't going to work going forward. I have a array of programs that address certain groups within my community that are forward thinking, that aren't being done everywhere, and some that I've written myself to include. The Lotus Project was featured in IACP's Chief of Police magazine, as well as the SAFE program and Teen and Police Service Academy, which we've been implementing this year, that works with at-risk youth. New programs, new engagements, forward thinking, social media campaigns. It all has to be progressive and it all has to be changing. And you can only do that with an open-minded chief who is willing to get out there and put the footwork in with your community. And I hope you would give me that opportunity. Thank you so much. And thank you to the people out there listening in for me, my current chief and my former chief. I'm so glad that you are here. And thank you so much for your mentorship. Thank you.
Well, on behalf of the City of Fairbanks, we want to thank you all. We're really honored to have all five of you, and we're sort of delighted that you want to be our Chief of Police, and good luck to all of you. Before we sign off, I want to say thank you to the Fairbanks Diversity Council. This is the time of their regularly scheduled meeting, and we put this forum in that place. They helped put it together and with the questions and to make this happen. So I think that's all we have for tonight. Thank you very much. Good luck. And very soon we'll see one of you in the chief's spot. Good night.